Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, if you've listened to us for any length of time, you realize that the theme of American Variety is really an anti-theme. It's anything but politics. But that doesn't mean that we don't deal sometimes with things that impinge on politics, right? I mean, it's not partisan politics is really what that means. And sometimes we take on topics in, for example, science and technology that have political implications, or they have social implications that become political. And our show today is one of those things. My guest is Dr. Filippo Mintzer, who is a professor of informatics and computer science at Indiana University. He's also the director of the Center for Complex Networks and Systems Research at the university there. So his research and his group's research focuses on the science of the World Wide Web, such as data mining, if you know what that is, distributed and intelligent web applications, and modeling of complex information networks. But in particular, he looks at the social science of the web, which is kind of an unusual intersection between social science and computer science, right, and informatics. That is, he looks at social media and social networks and social computing and the science of web searching. And there's a whole research area that's fairly new in that space of research. So his group is rapidly gaining attention for a basically million-dollar research grant that they have from the National Science Foundation to develop a project called Truthy, like the word truth with a Y on the end, that studies the ways that information is spread online and analyzes what mechanisms drive it and why some ideas take off, for example, and go viral, and others disappear quickly without a trace. So they've developed a website that describes this diffusion of information in the form of memes, if you know what those are, M-E-M-E-S. And we'll describe these things later, but these are kind of technical web informatics terms. And conservatives in particular are up in arms about this project, and we'll explore why. Dr. Mintzer, can I call you Phil?
Yes, definitely. And can I call you Court?
You sure can.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being on, and welcome to the show. So first, tell us about the Truthy project in a broad, general way. And meanwhile, your listeners might want to go to the website for it while we're talking about it. It's Truthy, T-R-U-T-H-Y, .indiana.edu. And look around while we talk. So go ahead.
Well, thank you. And I should say that some parts of the website right now are not working very well because, of course, this is about research. This is not a commercial product. So we hope people will be patient with us. But about the project, this was developed in response to a call from the National Science Foundation a few years ago about research where computer scientists like myself and network scientists like my colleagues in my group could work together with social scientists on questions of broad social relevance. And we were very interested in studying social media that were becoming so popular and how they are used to transmit information that is critical to society, including information about politics and disasters and everything else. And so that's how this idea came about of a project that would look at all different aspects of how information spreads through social media and also how social media can be abused. So this is a broad project. As you mentioned, there is a significant amount of funding and it has supported several graduate students and researchers over the years. And so we've looked at lots of different research questions. I would say they fall roughly into three categories. One is more theoretical work, where we build models and these models generate some data and predictions, and then we compare these predictions against empirical data, which we gather from Twitter mostly. It's open, public data that anybody can get, to see whether these models help us understand something about how information propagates. For example, to be practical, how the fact that this information travels on a specific network, a social network that has a certain structure, and how the fact that we have only finite attention spans, how do these things affect what goes viral and what does not go viral? And how can we use perhaps what we know about the influence of users or the structure of the social network to predict who you're going to follow, who you're going to pay attention to, and what information is going to go viral? So these are more sort of theoretical questions, although they have an empirical component. A second thread is more about analytics. We collect a lot of data, again, public data from Twitter especially, and then we use this data to try and ask some questions of interest to social scientists. For example, we've looked at social movements like the Occupy Wall Street movement or the recent uprising in Turkey. And we study questions such as geographical spread of information, or how does people participation respond to events on the ground? These kinds of questions. We've also used data from social media to see if this platform could be used as a polling system to predict, for example, the outcomes of elections. And some of our colleagues have used to see if it can be used to predict other kinds of events, such as movements in the stock market. And we've also looked at trending topics. For example, from the geographical perspective, are there some cities that tend to generate some trends that are then followed by other cities? And how does that happen and why? One of the areas of study is, of course, politics, because this is of interest to social scientists and to reporters. And so, for example, we looked at, can we quantify polarization? Can we measure how information tends to spread, for example, only within a certain community of people that have similar ideas, versus what information tends to cross those boundaries and be shared also with people who have different ideas? And so in that context, we looked how polarized political communication is in the United States and what kind of messages are more likely to be retweeted by people on the left or only by people on the right, or what kind of messages are more likely to be shared across. So these are kind of empirical analytics questions. And then the third component is more of a data, what we call data mining. That is, can we build machine learning systems, algorithms, programs that can help us detect different kinds of abuse? So two kinds of abuse that we've looked at are AstroTurf, which is when somebody tries to generate the appearance of an organic conversation by using programs and social bots and algorithms to fake communication by real humans to promote something. It could be spammers, or it could be hackers trying to push some malware, some bad software that will then infiltrate your computer and gather data and so on. Can we detect these kind of attacks? And also, can we recognize what accounts are real humans versus what accounts are just generating a content from software? These are what we call social bots. So these are the kinds of abuse or misinformation that we try to look at, mostly from the patterns of diffusion of information.
So what you described is mainly focused on politics. And I'm wondering, I mean, there are other big spheres of Twitterdom, like celebrities, for example, probably rivals politics, if not exceeds it in terms of the amount of tweets that generates on any given day. But did the government agency that funded you, the National Science Foundation, did they task you to focus specifically on politics? And I guess my question is, what is the underlying purpose of the research you're doing? Is it just strictly to understand how information propagates on a particular, starting from a particular base and broadening outward, like fission? or is there some underlying purpose that does focus on politics and hate speech and propaganda and that kind of thing?
No, the National Science Foundation certainly did not task us with anything in particular. This was our proposal. Mm-hmm. We focused on a few domains where we thought that we could collect interesting data that would be of interest to social scientists. And politics is one of them. It is definitely not the only one. We've also looked at social movements. These are not necessarily political, or at least they're not related to U.S. politics. We've looked at social movements in the Arab Spring, like I mentioned, in Turkey. And we've also looked at news in general, because these are very general patterns that are, in a certain sense, easy to detect, because it is easy to extract large volumes of data about news. And they don't have to be political news. We've looked at some events, sporting events, for example, and sometimes there are disasters. And we and other colleagues have studied dynamics of propagation of information about disasters. So it is very broad. One of the foci is politics, in particular because we realize that there is a concern when social media can be abused to manipulate public opinion about politics. So, like I said, you could generate spam bots, for example. You could write software that generates millions of messages pushing for a particular product. Well, that's bad, and it can generate damage and costs and so on. But in the domain of politics, you know, this could have even more serious consequences, you know, for example, misinforming people or keeping them from voting and or whatever. So with the social scientists, especially journalists that we were collaborating with when preparing this proposal, we figured that politics could be one of the domains of interest. There wasn't a particular focus on, you mentioned hate speech, for example. Although it was mentioned in a phrase at the end of our summary that has been used and looked at by some reporters, this has not really been a focus of our research. And certainly we don't try to define in any way things like misinformation or hate speech from the content, because that's not what we do. That would be very difficult to do, and nobody has a good definition for it. So we mainly focus on the spread of information in any domain. And we try to see whether these patterns of spread can tell us something about the message and how perhaps reliable that information is based on, for example, whether it is being promoted by social bots versus real humans.
I can see the information science value of what you're doing for sure. But it is interesting that your NSF award on the NSF National Science Foundation Award abstract listing says, and I'm going to quote, "This service could mitigate the diffusion of false and misleading ideas, detect hate speech and subversive propaganda, and assist in the preservation of open debate." So that's a good thing on the face of it. But that's probably the core of what caught the attention of people, largely conservative bloggers, right, who are objecting to it. And they ask, how do you define false and misleading ideas and decide what's subversive propaganda? So these are subjective assessments, I mean, on the face of it, right? So many times those things are obvious to reasonable people, but it does have a kind of a big brotherish sound to it. And it seems like something that, even to a reasonable person, could potentially be abused in the future by a government or governments. So I guess the problem those people have with it, and I can understand that perspective on it, even though I see from a balance point of view, I can see the value of doing it too, you know. And actually, if it's done in a benign way, it helps to tamp down things that are themselves disruptive to society. But you get into a squishy area there. So how do you respond to those charges that have been made in the media about your project?
Yes, I agree with you that those words that you quoted from the summary of the abstract that is published on the NSF website may have caused some of these misunderstandings. So first of all, let me say that sentence that you quote was, of course, a forward-looking statement about potential long-term societal implications of the research. As you know, when we scientists have to, write proposals and submit them to funding agencies, funding agencies are interested in us telling them, so in the long run, what could be interesting potential developments of this kind of research? Why should we invest taxpayer money in this kind of research? Is it just a little hack or a little thing with no application, or is it something that in the long term could lead to more and new things and new areas of research? And so, as we were thinking of the particular piece, which, as I mentioned, is just one piece of the proposed research that dealt with the spread of misinformation, the detection of AstroTurf and social bots, and the abuse of social media. Well, of course, a long-term implication of understanding the abuse of social media is that it could raise awareness of people and make them better educated about the means and about the technology, and therefore use the medium better for whatever it is that they want to use it, whether it is to talk about Justin Bieber or whether it is to talk about politics or whatever else. So we mentioned the preservation of open debate because we are big believers that new media like social media can be very helpful to people in communicating, exchanging ideas in a free way. And we wouldn't want abuse. We wouldn't want a hacker to easily create a program that generates millions and millions of messages and squelches debate and squelches free speech by making this platform unusable, or that it would make people believe things that are completely untrue and spread misinformation. We've had many examples on this. For example, in disasters, we've had resources wasted because dispatchers were sent to address problems that were non-existent because somebody was having fun posting information about wounded people or bombs or suspects in bombing. You remember the headlines of all of these kinds of events where we have lies and misinformations and rumors that spread, and they could cause a lot of damage. And so we were interested to understand how this abuse happens, how this misinformation spreads, and if we understand it, then people can understand it better and use the medium better. The same thing happened with technologies before. You know, when we started using the phone, and before that, when we started reading newspapers, right? There were always ways in which these media could be abused or misused. Mm-hmm. And then we learn, even email. At some point, email was almost unusable because of all the spam. And then we developed technologies to help us deal with the spam. And now that medium is more usable again. This is exactly what we're doing. We're trying to develop technologies that can protect this medium and preserving it for whatever use we want to make of it. I do want to be very, very clear that in our grant, in our research, people can read our papers. They're all posted online and freely accessible to anyone. There's never any attempt to define for us, like for humans, to define hate speech or define misinformation. That is not certainly part of our research. Like I said, we focus on the patterns of diffusion, and we focus on automatic, on whether it is possible. So it's a research question. We are not building a system. We are trying to understand whether it is possible to understand how organic information spreads and see if that can help us inform people about, help them understand when they see something, how to understand who's talking about it. Is it real? Am I talking to real people? I'll give you another example, specifically directed at your question about, you know, how can you preserve open debate by looking at misinformation, and are, you know, is this some kind of censorship or something like that? And so, in the past, we've had some protests in some countries like Iran and Russia. And social media were being used by people to coordinate these protests, for example, to exchange information about where they were going to meet and stuff like that. And then some people, possibly government agencies, we don't know, flooded social media, especially Twitter, with messages that would use the same hashtags that were being used by the protesters with complete junk, noise or misinformation. They might say, no, we're not meeting there, or this is happening tomorrow, or just simple junk, millions and millions of junk messages, so that people could not even find the messages that they were looking for by tracking these hashtags. So these are examples in which the medium is being abused to squash free speech and open debate. So if people had technologies that they could use to alert them that this kind of attack was happening, then they could choose to do something, for example, change the channel of communications that they were using. And so this is just one example of how better understanding the technology, better understanding how the technology can be abused, can indeed have long-term positive implications on preserving some medium for open debate. Because, you know, you cannot have open debate if you don't know who you're talking to. If you don't know who you're talking to, you might be manipulated. Maybe you're wasting your time talking to a piece of software instead of talking to a real human. And in that case, that is not open debate. You're using your resources you're wasting your resources in some way. So these are some examples of the kind of forward-looking thinking that we were doing when writing this proposal. But of course, once again, I have to repeat, there was never any attempt for us as researchers to come up with some, you know, definition of misinformation or hate speech. That is not what our research is about, like I mentioned earlier.
Okay, so, I mean, the reason I'm pursuing this line of questioning is I'm kind of acting as a straw man to present questions that will arise in the public as time goes on if your project gains more visibility, which it may. And, you know, it seems, I mean, I've had shows in the past once or twice on the internet at different stages along the way of the development of the internet. And, is it good or evil? And, you know, it's always a balance, right? So this seems like so many lines of development and technology that have the potential for both good and evil. And so the kind of the empowering of people in general to understand when they're being manipulated through social media is a good thing. But it has a flip side to it, like so many things do. I mean, for example, this has maybe implications for detecting the recruitment of people by terrorist organizations or for predicting attacks, for example. But at the same time, it can detect anyone who shows a sympathy for an insurgent group somewhere in the world and then subject that person to monitoring just because of what maybe even a casual thought or something. And so it kind of, in a way, reminds you of the National Security Agency eavesdropping that Edward Snowden, I think his name was, brought to light. And in some way, I mean, it's kind of reminiscent of that stuff, and it maybe raises a red flag and on the part of certainly the groups that have been objecting to it. So are there, I mean, kind of briefly, Phil, are there any built-in safeguards against abuse of this service by governments, whether ours or foreign in the future, or by corporations or by individuals who could kind of game it for their own purposes to turn it against itself and subvert it or countermeasure it? Are there any kind of safeguards built into that, or are you thinking about those things for the future?
Oh, boy. Briefly is hard. It's such a tough question.
Sure.
I should say that, I mean, we are not doing any kind of monitoring that other people cannot do. I mean, we're not in the business of monitoring or providing any data that is not publicly available to anyone, right? We are simply looking at patterns of spreads and doing statistical analysis of these patterns and then trying to make these data available to reporters and social scientists or even citizens, if one day we can have a system like that, for making their own assessment and evaluation of the information that they see online. But certainly there is no, you know, monitoring. So I really have a hard time imagining how the kind of research that we are doing in this project could be directly used in a negative way like you were describing. However, the more general question is very important. Yes, you're absolutely right. Technology can always have, technology is neutral, it's neither good or bad, and it could always be used for good things and for bad things. And we cannot even imagine the ways in which something can be used in the future. So I don't know the answer to your question. Can it be used for bad things? I don't know. But certainly, if we better understand the techniques used by abusers, and because we are researchers, we publish these, and then these are used to build countermeasures and to protect our systems or to make people more aware, then abusers will think of more clever ways to deceive the public. And this has happened with spam, for example, right? Our first spam filters worked well, and then spammers got smarter. And then we had to build better filters and so on. And so this may happen also with AstroTurf and misinformation on social media. We will develop better countermeasures, and then the hackers and the abusers and will develop better attacks. And this is somewhat inevitable in technology. It's kind of an arms race. And it usually ends when the countermeasures are good enough that the attackers have to spend a lot of resources, more resources than they have, in order to mount an effective attack. But these are sort of general philosophical questions. You know, our project really is not, like I said, it's not generating any specific data that is not available to anyone else. We're simply providing ways that people can look at information and understand better how it spreads, and understand what make it more likely that one message will spread or another will spread, or that some people are going to be more likely to adopt a meme or to copy it or reproduce it or pay attention to it than others. So I would say that what we're doing is, you know, not even remotely similar or related to any of the things that we read in the headlines about NSA and monitoring and building databases. We're not doing any of these things. We're not building databases of hate speech or misinformation. We're not generating anything that the government could use or abuse in any way that we could think of.
You mentioned a minute ago, and I mentioned in the introduction, a meme, M-E-M-E. Probably a lot of people don't know what that is. Just if you can, briefly, what is a meme?
Yeah, a meme is any piece of information that can be transmitted from one person to another. This actually, the term was introduced by Richard Dawkins, and he was thinking in analogy to genes and how they are passed from one individual to an offspring. But for us, a meme could be a phrase, it could be an idea, it could be a URL, a link to a blog with some information on it. It could be a picture, a username, a hashtag on Twitter, anything that can be propagated and copied from one message to another, from one person to another, so that we could track how information spreads. The memes that we pay attention to are the ones that we can measure, that we can observe in the public data that we have. In the public culture now, the word meme has come to be associated with these pictures with some text on it. Mm-hmm. And that is would be one example of meme that can propagate on social media, because, of course, people can post and repost and tweet and retweet these pictures. So that would be just one example of a meme.
Okay, so what kinds of information, I mean, from the standpoint of a user, and I think this will become a public site, that's part of your mission is to make this Truthy project accessible to the public, and you mentioned that, you know, it will become a tool that the public can use. So what kinds of information does the site display and will it display and how is it displayed that people can use it to do the kinds of things you were describing?
We would like, if we are successful, to develop a service that people can actually use. Mostly what we're developing and have done until now on the website are a bunch of demos and demonstrations of the algorithms that we're describing. An example of that is called Bot or Not. And it's a system where you can submit a username for Twitter. And then our system will use a machine learning algorithm to come up with some number, which is an estimate of the probability that this account is an actual human being versus it is a social bot, a piece of software. And this is still work in progress, and the demo is just to show the kind of work that we could be doing. And one day, if you're having a conversation with an account, and you start thinking that this account, you know, is this really a person I'm talking to or a bot, then software like that could be useful to people. So that's one example. Early on, we also had some visualizations on the website. This system is right now not working, but we had some visualizations where people could submit a hashtag, for example, or a username or a phrase, and visualize the pattern of spread of that message so that you could see the difference between an organic conversation, for example, some hashtags that people are talking about in politics, like, you know, commonly used hashtags like TCOT and P2 and so on. These are real organic conversations by real people, and compare that with the pattern of spread of other hashtags that are completely fake and made up and promoted by bots or by spammers or by hackers. And obviously there are big differences. So that was meant to visualize, to give information to people and show how they could use information about the spreading of these memes to make their own conclusions about they are looking at something that is real and organic or fake and manufactured.
Well, Phil, we are going to have to cut it off there. Gosh, this is clearly one of those topics we could talk easily for another half hour about, but we are out of time. So I want to give the website again, and I realize it's under construction and not really for public consumption quite yet, but you can get an idea of what Dr. Mincer is talking about at truthy.indiana.edu. Dr. Mincer, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety.
Thank you, Court.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.